Burn Detection Podcast, powered by Siemens. And now your host, Niall Sullivan.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to this the latest episode of the Trend Detection Podcast. I'm really pleased to have my colleague Abhishek on today. We've got a really interesting topic we're going to dive into. It's actually the readiness for predictive maintenance in India, where Abhishek is based. And we're going to dive into that topic. I think we're planning a few other episodes around that for different regions as well, just to get different sort of perspectives on it. But I'm really been looking forward to this chat. So I guess before we get started into it, Abhishek, if you could just introduce yourself to the audience, that'd be really good.
Yeah. Hi. So I am Abhishek Basu. Currently, I am based out of in Mumbai. And I am looking into business development for the digitization projects. So among which the one of the key portfolios is Sensei. And I've been so excited once I got this opportunity and the kind of things that I've explored over the past one and a half years. It's amazing. I'd really like to share this story today.
Yeah, so I guess before we get started into the overarching topic. So what sort of excites you about predictive maintenance, Abhishek, as a, from your personal perspective?
Yeah. So when I initially hearing about the generalized topic, predictive maintenance, you start thinking that, yes, you will get the insights, which will help you understand that, understand the health of a machine. But after a while, when I get into the depths of Sensei, that is when I knew it's much, much more than that. And it was completely new thing for me. And going forward, the excitement which I could feel, I guess I'm able to pass on to my customers as well. And that's why I've been seeing a very, very positive response where everybody is really understanding that so-called predictive maintenance, what has been happening in the market, is not what it should be. And this is where Sensei brings in with a brand new perspective. So this whole approach, how we are dealing with predictive maintenance, and now Sensei is approaching this problem statement. It's completely new. It's absolutely game changing.
Oh, fantastic. It's really good to hear. Your infectiousness for the Sensei products sort of passing over to customers as well. So that's really good to hear. But on that point, you said you were sort of hinting there about some of the issues around sort of predictive maintenance, let's say adoption within the market, or maybe an understanding of that. Maybe we could kick it off there, and you could maybe go into that in a bit more detail.
Yeah. So initially, wherever we have pitched in with Sensei, the feedback has been amazing, right? There has been hardly any customer where they don't get excited about this topic in general for predictive maintenance. And as and when they get into the insights of Sensei, everybody has a very, very positive feedback. But where I feel our experience has been that somewhere still this is a digitization journey. So for many of our customers, they haven't started yet in this journey, or the ones who have started, they feel that now they can do everything on their own. So it's a bit of a mixed place where, and the ones who haven't started, for them, a solution like Sensei seems like too good to be true, honestly, right? They really can't believe that this is really possible. That's why they keep on asking for references. Where have you done? Do you have something in India where we can locally go and check? Is it really possible to be so accurate and come up with such kind of predictions? So it's a completely new thing. And even for the ones who are trying to develop in-house, even the kind of journey or the thought process that they had, and then once they see what Sensei has been doing, even they have started to rethink and reconsider, is it really possible to achieve? Because ultimately they are also looking at the business outcome. How soon can it impact their business? They might be able to develop something maybe at half of the potential of Sensei, but it might still take them 5, 6, 10 years maybe. But then what about how to solve the business case today? And that is where Sensei is more of an out-of-the-box solution for them. So it's been somewhat like that, yeah.
And so why do you mention building in-house solutions? So why are customers sort of leaning towards building in-house solutions rather than going with an external provider like Siemens instead?
Yeah. So I think this is also somewhere we have to understand the uniqueness of India. In India, the IT organizations are very dominant, right? The way, even if we look at the global scale, the way things have been implemented via India, India is sort of an IT hub now, right? We have been providing solutions for the global players. So that's why there's a lot of resource within India. And then considering not only the resource availability, also the scenarios where it can be deployed. So people do think that they have the problem within house and they also have the resources locally available. So somewhere they feel that they can develop. And many companies, even the big ones, probably I'll not name anyone, but they have been taking this process whereby they have been investing a lot. But again, this is something very interesting. If we really look into that, how much of in-house deployment have they done with whatever R&D they have been working on? It's very, very minimum. Because still, those things are not yet at a stage where it can straight away give some business outcome. That is when we get into a meeting and probably the decision makers, they start reevaluating. Are we at the right approach or do we have the correct solution right across the table? Should we go and explore it? So this is the kind of things which we have been seeing now.
And does that, I guess having that, you know, where a customer's built and used an in-house solution beforehand, does that help you with when you're going into sort of sales conversations where they've already had experience, maybe a negative experience, I'm presuming negative experiences of trying to deploy in-house solutions, and that's why they're looking towards Siemens. Does that sort of help your position, I guess, when you're speaking to customers?
So both the things happen, honestly. So here at times, people say, yeah, we did certain things. Things have failed miserably. And then how you're addressing the problem statement, we vouch for it, right? So that is one thing. Secondly, there is also a thing where probably they have taken multiple attempts. And since they have failed so many times, now mentally or somewhere within the management, they feel that this really can't be achieved. It's not possible. So there's a blockage where they feel that probably it's more of a marketing gimmick than what really can be achieved because they have tried it. The whole point is the way they have tried it, maybe that was not correct, right? So that's why there is a limbo where they are really not sure. They feel very, very tempted. That's why they keep on calling us back. They keep on engaging with us. They try and understand more and more, but somewhere they're really not sure. So we have experienced, we have had multiple customers. In fact, just a few minutes back, I was in conversation with a customer where I'll be visiting next week. They had the same thing. So they have failed so many times that they are now very, very skeptic and they really want to then look into very small aspects. And this is also where we say, we really can't do a predictive maintenance for one or two machines. It doesn't work. We need at least a bunch. And that is also a challenge where since they have failed so much, they really, for 50 assets, it seems like a huge task for them. They say, why can't you just, it means you have such a good solution. Why can't you just do this for say 4, 5, 6 machines, motors, that's all. So that I can build up the case and then I can take it back to my management and say, finally, we have something which is proven and let's go ahead with it. But again, from the business perspective for us, it really doesn't work out. So this is where we really are negotiating with multiple customers. So it's a very gradual process whereby we need to educate them, make them understand, and hopefully, fingers crossed.
It's interesting, yeah, because I was thinking of it with like a positive lens that they'd come into a meeting with, oh, we've had these projects before and we've got all these learnings that we can take into the new project. But you're right, on the other side, it adds a few levels of skepticism about whether a PDM project can work. Yeah. And like you said, I guess most customers want to start, and that leads to them wanting to start on a small scale, where obviously we know with Sensei predictive maintenance, it's scales of things. So how do you sort of overcome that hurdle of, you know, just convince them that scale is really where you're going to see the most effective results. It sounds like a bit of a challenge.
Yeah. So here is where we tell them, can we have the worst case scenarios? Okay. So let's not start with something which is quite convenient, which is very easy, whereby you can understand. Give us the worst case scenarios. And let's, if we are talking about a plant, I'm sure at least we would be able to pick up 50 such odd assets where the failures are much more. And this is, again, we try to reemphasize that we are just not looking at an individual machine. We are trying to looking at the whole process. So pick up data from various machines, which are all interrelated, and make them realize that the focus shouldn't be so narrow so as to just pick up one machine, rather look at the whole process. Because ultimately, even if that machine fails, it's an impact for the whole process. So why not pick up the worst case scenarios across one processing line and then look into that? And then usually we turn up with good number of machines, right? Even if it's not exactly 50, even if it's say 35, 40, it's a good number to start discussing. And then definitely there are other auxiliary systems, maybe some utilities and certain things with which we can club together and get to this figure. So this is again where what we are really emphasizing is we are getting into the shop floor of the customers. We see that what kind of machines there are, what kind of data points are there. And then finally, we discuss and we show them. So you really have much, in most of the cases, much more than 50 assets. You really have such scenarios. And then just give it a try. It's just, you can just try it for a year and you can see the results. And then we can assure that you will be scaling it up across your whole factory. But it is also important to understand we cannot just focus on one and two machines. And we also to really means we are convinced that the product makes sense. But for you to get convinced, you will also need certain time. So it's sort of re-educating and convincing that this is the right approach. So things are there.
And to what you're saying, how much does sort of cultural, you know, the culture and in India, like impact sort of readiness for predictive maintenance projects. Is that a factor, or even a big factor or a small factor?
I think I haven't initially at the very early days. I had this thought process that maybe I'll face a lot of resistance from the maintenance team saying that this is something which is going to replace me. Fortunately, I haven't had that kind of an approach coming from the customers. But yes, there is something where we see that unless it is, there is some say on it from the top management. Even if the maintenance team, they understand that, yes, this is making sense for me, but they really don't want to adapt so quickly. So this is a very normal thing across various organizations, right? Because everybody is happy with their own comfort zone, even though they can understand this can bring huge benefits. But there are certain cultural changes also, certain adaptations which are also very necessary. So this is also we put forward very clearly to the customers. It's just not about buying a product. And even from Siemens, we are just not here to just sell you something and then move away. This is again where we come up with the knowledge platform. So we are just not trying to sell you something. We are trying to empower you so that you really can understand the potential and you can take it forward. Like we have certain customers where they have done it to huge scale and now it's multiplied across various factories, right? So this is the same thing where we try and emphasize that we are just not here trying to sell PDM. We are trying to change their whole approach into their whole maintenance approach. And it requires certain cultural change as well. And then we have the mechanisms which will automatically help them have this gradual shift. So there are customers, those who, once they have gone into these details, they really understand that we are just not trying to sell a product and move out of it. To collaborate and to be part of this journey. And they really appreciate that. And they also understand that this kind of thought process can only come from a company like Siemens, where we look at building relationships, not just selling products and walking away. That's not the case.
Yeah, and that's actually very true. I guess some reason why Sensei is a great fit within Siemens, because our approach has always been like very much, and it still is actually very much collaborative with you know customers, and it's not a case of we'll sell your technology and off you go. You know, it's very consultative. It's very, you know, we work very closely to ensure that it's providing value, and both from an initial project to, you know, and obviously to justify a scaling further. And we've got lots of customers who, like you said, it's not just been, you know, great technology and it's provided, you know, reduced downtime or increased productivity, but it has, you know, literally changed how they approach maintenance, which I think is quite an interesting. But how do you sort of sell that vision? Not sell the vision, but it's selling that vision of organizational change, because I guess that must provide a few skeptics in itself.
Yeah. You know, these discussions, we cannot have this kind of discussion with the one who is responsible at ensuring that the production is at 100% or at its peak, because their thought process is absolutely focused on production. They don't care or they don't have the thought process or the time to even think that what kind of changes are required. Probably we need to just get to the people who are just managing on top of them. And that is where we have seen the discussions becomes more fruitful. And that is also one key thing, what we have understood, and now we are trying to leverage it out. But we need to speak with the decision makers, those who can really understand that what we are bringing in. A cultural shift, it has to be top-driven, right? It cannot happen from the bottom. And also they are the ones, those who can really understand that the approach, what we are saying, it is what is making sense on the long term. And there's no quick fix to it. It's just not that we deploy these things and just over a month and everything changes and everything gets automated. It's not magic. There is certain hard work, but there is a guideline to that. That's the best part. So we have everything which is documented. It has a very clear steps. How do we approach it? And the application is absolutely there. So I think it's also something where we are seeing this shift coming.
Please like and subscribe on all major podcast channels and find out more about Sensei Predictive Maintenance at Siemens.com.